morning and welcome to the City of Palm Coast City Council meeting, virtual, September 15, 2020. Pursuant to the governor's executive order suspending all Florida statutes that require a quorum to be present in person at local government public meetings or require a local government body to meet at a specific public place, the city may conduct meetings of its council without having a quorum of its members present physically or at any specific location and utilizing communications media technology such as telephonic or video conferencing as provided by Florida statutes. As mayor, pursuant to the authority granted to me by the city charter, I declared a public emergency on March 15, 2020 in response to COVID-19. Furthermore, pursuant to those powers and the governor's executive order, I suspended all city requirements that require a physical quorum to be present to conduct this meeting and authorize that this meeting be conducted by communications media technology under the city's state of emergency proclamation for virtual meetings executed on April 3, 2020. The city manager, pursuant to the authority granted him by the city's initial state of emergency for COVID-19, has closed City Hall to the public. Therefore, no member of the public will be allowed into the community wing of City Hall during this meeting. Notice that this meeting was going to be held by communication media technology and not at a physical location was posted on the city's website at least 5 days ago. The notice provided that those members of the public needing reasonable accommodation to participate in the meeting could contact the city clerk for assistance by noon, September 14, 2020. Access to this meeting is being provided via live stream on the city's website at www.palmcoastgov.com and by calling 386-223-1690. Should you need technical assistance, please call 386-986-2391. Today is September 15, 2020. It is 9 a.m. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland?
Here.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Good morning, present.
Councilmember Branquino? Councilmember Cuff?
Present.
And Councilmember Nitz.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you. We'll now open it up to public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please feel free to call in at 386-223-1690. It's star 9 and you will be unmuted. You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name clearly for the record and your 3 minutes will begin. Thank you very much, Doug. We'll now move to agenda item number 1, which is approval of the minutes of the City Council, September 1st, 2020, business meeting, September 8th, 2020, workshop. Do I have a motion?
Move to approve as submitted.
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. Virginia, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Aye.
Councilmember Cuff?
Aye.
Councilmember Nitz?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. We'll now move to agenda item number 2, which is presentation COVID-19 update.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Briefly, some way of background again, and we do have Chief Forte and Captain Escalante to give the COVID-19 update. We continue to move, and depending on how you count on your calendar, we're in month 7 of the global pandemic, and as we're continue to say we're sort of holding the line and moving forward daily and weekly monitoring changes from the state of Florida. We just saw a release which allowed bars to open with seating and restaurants to open to 50% capacity. Continue to follow the best guidelines and practices of the CDC and our health partners. Along those lines, we continue to test our wastewater, as we've discussed multiple times. It continues to provide very timely and useful tactical information, not just for us in decision making about the overall health of our community in relationship to COVID-19, but has and continues to inform our health department on where additional testing sites and outreach should occur. So far, that's been very valuable. Those maps are available to anyone who wishes to see them. at our Palm Coast Connect Virtual City Hall under the COVID-19 questions tab. A large map tab will pop right up. Lots of useful information graphically displayed and in relationship, again, to assisting living facilities, nursing homes, and schools, and then the number of cases that we're recording both through the health department data and through the sewage system wastewater testing. So that continues to be very useful and very informative. As a staff, we continue to push for the second round of the CARES Act funding as we can to ensure that money gets delivered to our Flagler County residents. And as you know, but inform the community, we have also been tracking expenses and time through FEMA in hopes of ultimately what is or may not be reimbursable by CARES Act, that there may be an opportunity to make the city and the community whole through FEMA funding. So we continue to work along those lines. A few technical time updates. Tomorrow is the first hybrid planning board meeting is back. That's the 16th. The one business item was tabled by request of the applicant, but they will hold the meeting and conduct training, and it will be a hybrid meeting open tomorrow. Again, City Hall will open Monday, October 5th, with our modified procedures, including the temperature scan, answering the questions, mask required, and wristband. And our first hybrid council meeting will be October 6th. So with that, I will ask Chief Forte and Captain Asconi to give us the COVID-19 update.
I have a question start.
Yes.
Can you highlight what the maps are showing with their wastewater testing, like current information? What is it showing, if anything, would be of interest?
To the community?
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you would like to let Captain Asconi start, and then that gives me time. I had them up this morning reviewing them. I'll pull them up again and be ready to answer the synopsis at the end.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Tom Asconi, Fire Captain. We are continuing working with our community partners for the last 7 months, as City Manager stated, with this pandemic. So where we're at locally, in Flagler County, we have 1,557 confirmed cases, 1,272 of them in the city of Palm Coast. We've had 125 hospitalizations and 19 fatalities. Schools reopened 4 weeks ago this week. There's been a slow rise in children's cases, which I expected a little bit higher of an increase. So I was very happy to see that we had a slower rise. In the first week of school, we had 119 children already had tested positive in Flagler County. So right now we're sitting at 151. So it's a 32 person increase in the last 4 weeks with children 18 years of age and under. So that's anybody in school, out of school, again, 18 and under. So it's only 32 in the last 4 weeks. So I was very happy to see that. Unfortunately, we still have had a slow rise recently in positive test increase cases. It's not as dramatic as it was back in July, but it is increasing slowly. DBPR did rescind 29, their executive order to close bars. So as of Monday at midnight, we're able to reopen bars at 50% capacity with seated service at the bars. The state did renew their emergency order for another 60 days, so we still fall under that. COVID aside, we are still watching five storms in the tropics. It has been extremely busy hurricane season that was predicted. We should be good for another 7 to 10 days. There's one coming off the coast of Africa that may come this way. So our team will be watching that and monitoring that daily. Well, that is our COVID update as of this morning. If you have any questions.
I just have a question, I guess, with the reopening of City Hall, and we have a mask requirement in City Hall. What precautions will staff be taking to ensure that it is complied with? And what if, indeed, individuals are refusing? What is the protocol? What's the plan? I know the health department has had some challenges in regards to people refusing to comply, and it's caused, a bit of a rift and a heightened level of energy. That's been sort of alarming to some of the staff in the health department. So what precautions are you taking?
So thank you for that question. We're taking a very serious approach to this, as we have all the way through the pandemic. Again, this isn't a fear approach or an overreaction. This is just following the best available data that we have and what we know works. As far as public meetings go, there will be a mask requirement. You will be screened at the door to come in with, again, the temperature, the questions, a mask will be required. If you choose not to wear a mask, you will be asked to leave the building. We are not going to create a situation where we're trying to make a statement about whether or not masks are required or necessary. That is the city's policy, my policy that I've established here. I've communicated very clearly with the Flagler County Sheriff's Office that people choosing to come in and remove or not wear their mask can leave, and they can watch the meeting remotely from their phone or from another location. When you come into City Hall on a daily basis, the exact same requirement. Staff is going to respect you as our residents by wearing masks, by providing hand sanitizer, by distancing, by, you know, the barrier or distancing measures we have. So we're going to have the same expectation day in and day out. I have asked that we have screeners that are either, you know, retired or volunteer COPs. And when you enter City Hall, you'll be screened, required to wear a mask during the duration of your visit. Again, staff will respect you and do the same thing. And if you choose not to, you can continue to do all of your business. We have very much perfected, very proud of that moment, through Palm Coast Connect, our virtual services. And so all services are available to you remotely.
Council, any questions or comments about the presentation before Matt highlights the some of the testing results of the updated maps?
No.
All right. So the maps continue to track. We have a master map zone, again, that you can take a look at through the Palm Coast Connect COVID tab, and then the maps tab will be right there in front of you. We're showing virus detection again in our PSD and PSB zones. We have those zones coded. PSD is essentially a narrow strip from Palm Coast. It's essentially the easternmost part of the C section, so between Matanzas River and Florida Park Drive on the east and west, and on the north and south Palm Coast Parkway to the end of that residential neighborhood. That is showing signalized detection, and that matches up with the health department zip code surveillance of residential positive test results, and also our PSB section, which essentially is Palm Harbor Parkway and Forest Grove on the north down to Palm Coast Parkway on the southeast. We have individual cases plus COVID-19 sewage detection in there. The other zones are still showing some signal. Again, if you recall, we've divided the city into six larger geographic zones, although those signals right now are not giving off enough signal without amplification to provide map results, which is again aligning with the health department data. And our largest outbreak actually falls right now within the northeast corner of Palm Coast, with 105 signalized case detected within the entire zone. So again, continues to provide us useful information that we share. I know we're in contact almost on a daily basis with the Department of Health, with Dr. Bickle and Bob Snyder, and their arm of contact tracers and testing personnel. So this continues to help us.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 3, which is presentation employee awards recognition.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. As we've continued to try to do, it's just inform our community. This is one of the ways that we're engaging and informing our community. We consider, you know, a huge part of our, our daily business. Our mission is making people the purpose of our work, not a distraction. We continue to push that as our cultural transformation here, and I think we've made great strides in recognizing our citizens as our most important work as staff. The second layer of that, or I guess in partnership with that, is the strategic action priorities of this city council that you have adopted. And one of the ways we execute those is through accomplishing the business of this city through those priorities. In line with that, we'd like to recognize, and we have Renina Fuller here this morning to present, those outstanding employees who continue to personify that public service. But not only that, the accolades, the awards, and the recognition that comes statewide and nationally from council setting and staff working towards fulfilling those priorities. And I think, again, this, a lot of these national awards and recognitions are testament to the quality of the strategic action plan that council lays out and your drive as a council to make sure we are serving this community. With that, Renina, can you present for us this morning?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Thank you for allowing me this time this morning to share a few of the many outstanding achievements and recognitions our employees have received. The first slide, we want to say congratulations to our finance department. The Budget and Procurement Office received an award of excellence in public procurement from the Florida Association of Public Procurement Officials. The Award of Excellence in Public Procurement was established to recognize the organizational excellence in procurement. The city was judged on innovation, professionalism, e-curement, productivity, and leadership. I'm going to now turn it over to Helena, who would like to say a little few things around her about our employees and would like to expand on this outstanding achievement.
Thank you, Renina. Good morning, Mayor, City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to recognize my procurement team for earning the Award of Excellence in Public Procurement for the second year in a row. It's a small team led by our Budget and Procurement Manager, Gwen Ragsdale, with a very large task. Both our Contracts Coordinator, Rose Consacio, and our Procurement Coordinator, Jesse Scott, work diligently to serve our residents and city departments. The city was judged on innovation, professionalism, e-procurement, productivity, and leadership. The award was established to recognize excellence in procurement, and I couldn't be more proud of my team for their accomplishment. Thank you.
Next, we would like to say congratulations to our Strategic Action Plan team, who have been recognized by the International City County Management Association, ICMA. Our team was awarded the Certificate of Distinction in Performance Management for their focus on data-driven management. Next, the city would like to recognize our employees for their dedication and years of service. We have two employees, Jim Nichols, who is our lead construction site inspector, and Brian Matthews, our environmental compliance manager, both have 40 years of service with the city. Combined, this is over 80 years of institutional knowledge that is totally priceless. Congratulations to these two gentlemen on achieving their anniversary with their city.
Congratulations.
Also, we have three employees, Eugene McAdams, who's our lead utility systems tech, Richard Klein, our fire lieutenant paramedic, and John Peacock, our fire lieutenant EMT, all have 20 years of service to the city. Thank you to Eugene, Richard, and John for their dedication. Next, we have 30 employees celebrating their 5 years of service, 11 employees celebrating 10 years of service, and 14 employees celebrating 15 years of service. A really big thank you to all of these employees. We know you have worked hard for this accomplishment, and we truly appreciate their dedication. Next, we have several people who have gone above and beyond. Our finance department would like to recognize Susan Daly, Wendy Williams, and Mike Geronimo for their extra efforts and teamwork. Mike has added courier to his daily schedule, as well as braving the post office to pick up and deliver the mail to City Hall. He willingly runs errands at a moment's notice. Susan and Wendy spend most of their time in the office as a team, making sure that payments by mail are opened and recorded in a timely manner. They assist their coworkers with printing, mailing, and scanning in order to keep those coming into the office at a minimum. Susan has taken an extra step in reaching out to coordinate payments, deposits, and mail for animal license, code enforcement, and anyone else who has a need. Kevin Nelson, in March of 2020, our stormwater maintenance supervisor, Kevin Nelson, received a work order about a pipe failure. After investigating the failure and realizing the severity of the situation, several staff members of Stormwater Division quickly coordinated an approach to have this repaired immediately. By making the decision to have the pipe lined instead of replaced, the stormwater maintenance were not put into a potentially dangerous situation. The need for temporary construction easements was avoided and no sidewalks had to be torn up. The golf course was not required to close for any period of time. This project took an immense amount of coordination on Kevin's behalf with the city staff, property, Pine Lakes golf course owners, and the contractor. This project was just completed in July. Danielle Jersey and Kevin Nelson both received safety kudos from our safety coordinator, Ben Coyley. Danielle was recognized for her awesome job with the coal plant number 2. She had everything organized and cleaned out, and Kevin was recognized for creating a good team whenever it comes to proper safety guidelines from equipment usage, PPE gear, and the heat index requirements. Last but certainly not least, we have several employees who have been recognized for their excellent customer service. These recognitions came from contractors, builders, residents, wanting us to know how professional, knowledgeable, polite, and thorough our employees have been in their interactions with our community. Also, on behalf of the city manager and all the department heads, supervisors, and managers, we appreciate every one of our employees' hard work and dedication and want to say thank you for being such valuable team members. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, and congratulations to all of the recipients as well as the recognitions that we've received. A very proud moment for our community, our city organization, and thank you, City Manager.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 4, which is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman.
Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, to annex property to be included within the corporate area and city limits of the City of Palm Coast, providing for the annexation of approximately 3.84 acres, more or less, of property described in Exhibit A to this ordinance and lying in the areas proximate to the existing city limits of the City of Palm Coast, Flagler County, Florida, providing for annexation in accordance with the voluntary annexation provisions of Section 171.044 Florida statutes, providing for annexation of real property and amendment of the corporate city limits for rights and privileges resulting from this annexation and the effect of annexation upon land uses, providing for effect on ad valorem taxes, for effect on businesses and occupations, for severability, providing for conflicts, and providing for an effective date. Mayor, Council, this is first reading of a quasi-judicial matter. If there have been any ex parte communications, those should be disclosed at this time.
Council, is there any ex parte communication?
None.
Sorry. Doug, do you see any ex parte, like is Councilmember Branquino, Vice Mayor Clufus, or Councilmember Cuff that wish to disclose?
No one's indicating now.
Okay, thank you. And I have none to report.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This item was heard at the September 8th, 2020 workshop. There have been no changes to the item at this point. We do have Jose Papa here this morning to present and answer questions.
Good morning, Mayor, members of City Council. Jose Papa for Community Development Department. As presented to you at the workshop, this is just a 3.8-acre parcel, southeast corner of State Road 100 and Airport Drive, which is a continuation of Bulldog Drive. And this parcel, again, was subject to a pre-annexation agreement. Conditions of that pre-annexation agreement have been met. Again, this parcel is under construction at this point. The only unknown at this time is when they will receive their certificate of occupancy. And the effective date of the ordinance will be adjusted such that they can receive their certificate of occupancy with Flagler County before the annexation goes into effect. I'll be happy to answer any questions at this time from council.
Councilor, are there any questions or comments?
No. I have none.
Thank you, Doug. We'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 4, please do so by calling in at 386-223-1690. We will close public comment, take it back to this council. I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve the ordinance at first reading.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Aye.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Councilmember Nentz?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes, thank you.
Motion passes 5-0.
Okay, we'll move to agenda item number 5, which is a resolution approving Aviara at Palm Coast Master Site Plan application number 4252.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This morning we have this proposed resolution approving Aviana at Palm Coast. And I'm going to ask Bill Hoover to come up to introduce and present on this item.
Good morning, everyone. Bill Hoover. I'm a senior planner with the Community Development Department. Aviara is a proposed multifamily project located on the east side of U.S. Highway 1. And the access is about a half mile north of Whiteview Parkway. And overall, the site's just under 100 acres. And it's proposed for a community of 256 homes. And since it's a Tier 3 master site plan, it's already went to the planning board, and then the city council makes a final review and determination. Aviara itself is designated as a mixed use in the future land use map. To the north, east, and south, all of that land is designated residential. And then to the west, we have industrial across US 1, and then right next to the project, mixed use in red, and then to the southwest corner, blue, which is institutional. On the zoning map, the Aviara is in the dark brown there, and that's multifamily residential 2. To the north and east, we have single family residential 2 and single family residential 3. To the south in the light brown, we have multifamily residential 1, and then to the south of that in a gray color is DPX or duplex. To the west, we have COM 2 in red. And then south of that is light industrial in the lavender. And then finally in the light blue is a little bit of public, semi-public. Across US 1 in Flagler County, that is zoned industrial. The site plan is pretty awesome, in my opinion, as a planner. It's one of the best ones I've ever seen. In the northeast corner of the site, they've retained an existing large lake. They've located the clubhouse on the southwest side of the lake. And then before the buildings, between the clubhouse and the buildings, they've kept the wetland area, which is good. But it also provides privacy for the people on the north side of the lake. So they get to keep their lake view, and then they have a wetland view. And then the buildings. So those buildings are about 400 feet, I believe, from the north property line. As you get to the south side of the site, they've got wetlands on the east side and the west side. So the only place they're even close to residential is on the very south corner of the site. Additionally, the developer is only building one-third of the units allowed under the MFR2 zoning district. This is a, if you got an airplane a couple years from now and this project moves forward, this is what it would approximately look like if you were at the southeast corner of the site looking northwest. So you can see US 1 and actually maybe a couple cell towers along there at sort of the top part of the screen. This is a overhead view of the site plan that's in color. And the US 1 sort of runs along the south side there as the north arrow is to the left. This is just a black and white site plan. Shows it a little bit more clear, and this is what the staff uses to review, not the colored actually. These are the site development requirements. The project's easily meeting all these standards, like minimum site area, 4 acres, they're over 90. Maximum building height, which is one of the more important ones, they're allowed to go 60, they're coming in at 35. The buildings are 3 stories. The next requirement there is building setbacks. So when you have a 3-story multifamily building, if it's adjacent to single-family zoning, the Land Development Code has a pretty nice requirement in there that there's a 20-foot additional setback. So the setback to the north is 30, the setback to the east is 40. And then even to the south, it's 10 feet, and the 20-foot doesn't apply there because that is not zoned single-family residential. It's multifamily residential 1. So even at the south, they're at 40 feet. All the other setbacks are at least 400 feet. On parking, they're required to have 489 spaces. They've got 517. And they're required to have 86 garages, which is a third of the units. They're coming in at 10 over that standard. In the air-conditioned area of the homes, they're required to be 650 square feet in the MFR2 district. Even the 1 bedrooms exceed that by about 125 square feet. This is an artist rendition of the front elevation. And this is the computerized version that the architect has done. At the top, you got the side views. In the middle, we have the rear elevation, and then the front elevation is on the bottom. Staff has to review each project for 5 review criteria from section 2.0505 of the Land Development Code. And in this case, it's a master site plan. So A, must not be in conflict with the public interest. B, must be consistent with both the comprehensive plan and Land Development Code. C, must not impose a significant hardship or liability for the city. D, must not create an unreasonable hazard or nuisance. And then E, needs to comply with all government standards. We reviewed this, all 5 criteria, and provided detailed findings in the staff report. In summary, the master site plan does not create a nuisance hazard or any compatibility issues, as it meets all development standards and is in compliance with its mixed-use designation on the future land use map. The project has all needed infrastructure in place except for what I think there's a utility extension on the east side of US Highway 1, but the applicant is doing that at their own cost and design. It supports 3 goals, policies, or objectives of the comprehensive plan and meets all standards in the LDC and the MFR2 zoning district. Okay, we struggled a little bit with this next one due to COVID-19. So we had a delay in this project. So anyway, they held the meeting at the Hilton Garden Inn. They sent out a letter on July 25th and then followed it up approximately a week later with a second letter. And so due to social distancing standards, we had two meetings, one at 6:15 and one at 7:30. The neighbors could also attend by Zoom. And of 50 people that attended, about 5 did by Zoom and 45 by in-person, with probably 75% of those attending the first meeting at 6:15. The next steps for the project, if City Council approves this, would be technical site plan review. And because they went through the master site plan review, even though they got 200 and plus units, it's a tier 3, it's all done administratively. The building permits would be reviewed after that, and then they can commence construction. The planning board was a virtual Zoom meeting back on August 19th at 5:30 p.m. Here's the good thing about the neighborhood meeting. We had 50 people in attendance. We get to the planning board. Not one person spoke for or against the project, so it shows the effectiveness of the neighborhood meetings, at least on this project. The planning board recommended approval to City Council by a 7-0 vote. And the planning board found this project in compliance with the comprehensive plan and recommended approval to City Council for application 4252, Aviera of Palm Coast, a master site plan for 256 homes, so the developer may apply for a technical site plan that would need to meet all applicable development requirements. And the applicant's representatives are online, and I believe the broker agent John Horan and the architect Joseph Pasquale will have a PowerPoint presentation, and if they will just say next, we will move the slide up for them.
Can I, beforehand, I'd like to just ask if council has any questions on your portion of the presentation before we move forward with
sure.
the applicant.
I assume this meets the ingress egress requirements of city.
Yes, sir. The initially they were talking about having another entrance to the south through the residential neighborhood, and where that came about was there is actually a road access there, and it was maybe intended to be. So with review by staff and the applicant and input from some neighbors, we changed that to a fire and an EMS access only. So it'll have like a Knox lock so the fire department can come up there, which what that does is it keeps all this traffic, including construction traffic, going through the existing residential neighborhood to the south.
Where will the residents' ingress and egress be? From what access point?
Okay, all the traffic for this project will come in on US 1. So it'll be about a half mile north of Whiteview Parkway. It used to be known as, you know this better than I do, it used to be known as Sand Lake, and so I don't know if that was a excavated lake or a burl pit at one time. That would be my expectation.
No anticipation of traffic problems on US 1?
No. The traffic out there on US 1 is more than sufficient to handle it. It would be at least that level of service B or
please.
C.
I'm on. Yeah. Bill?
Wait, hold on, Councilmember Cuff. So does that conclude your questions, Councilmember
Cuff? Yes, thank you.
Okay. Yes, go ahead, Councilmember Cuff.
Bill, the 50 people you got for the community meeting, how many, do you know how that was broken down by the homes to the south, the Wood Acre? I have to confess I'm a little concerned. I know this meets the technical requirements for our code, but those are, you know, those are duplexes, and some of them haven't been built yet, and that seems kind of tight on the south boundary, given how generous the buffers are every place else in the project. I'm wondering what input you got from those residents on the south side.
The residents on the south side, I can't really break down the percentage of people there. Traffic was a big concern. There was some concern from people to the south. However, it doesn't really show up on this, but there is a berm, I believe it's like 6 or 8 feet tall, with trees and other landscaping on there. So the applicant did go down and meet with a couple neighbors, and where the building should be, they don't think they're really gonna hardly be able to see those buildings between the berm and the landscaping that'll be saved. So there's like a 40-foot wide stretch that will be retained.
Thank you.
That conclude your questions for now, Councilmember?
Yes, that's for my questions for now, Mayor. Thank
Any
you.
Other questions, council members?
Yes, me. A quick question. Out of the 256 units, some of them have 700 square feet. How many of those we have? I know you showed it over here, but I had a little problem with my iPad. Can you give me the breakdown again? How many units we have of those of 700 feet? Square feet. Sorry.
Let me see if I put that in the staff report.
Maybe the architect can answer, I don't know.
Yeah, they may break that down in the next presentation. I don't think I have the breakdown of the units. I have the breakdown of the sizes. So when it goes to two bedroom, it goes to 1,071 square feet, and the three bedrooms are 1,226.
I can answer that quickly for you. It's 96 units are one bedroom.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Brinquino, does that conclude your questions, or does that
I would like to know how many two-bedroom and three-bedroom, please. If they could answer. If not, then.
This is Ray Tyner. I mean, we make sure that they meet the minimum, and I think the applicant has probably some of those answers, like on how many units and based on what their market value is for that area. So if they want to answer now, I guess they can.
Yeah, it's 122 bedrooms. That's 1202 bedrooms and 43 bedrooms.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's my questions.
Okay. Thank you. Does that include all council member questions at this time before the applicant presents?
Yep. I have none, Ms. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mayor, Vice Mayor, and Council members. Pleasure to be here. I'd like to see if John Horan can start off with sharing with you a little bit of our history there.
Thank you, Joe. I'm sorry I didn't unmute it. My name is John Horan. I'm the local agent for the owner of Aviera. And before we get started, I'd just like to thank staff for their guidance, their input throughout the process. With over 25 years of development experience in our county and in Palm Coast, I'd really like to say that it was very refreshing to be welcomed, to have such good assistance, professionalism, and I'd really like to thank the staff. It was actually a pleasure to work with them. And I've been working with Joe Pasquale for 5 years, and I'd like to introduce him. Joe's the architect and the site designer for the project, and can also answer some other questions in regards to the south side a little later. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and I ditto that. I enjoyed working with Ray and Bill tremendously and their staff, really dotting the I's and crossing the T's in this project and helping us through everything. It was enjoyable. I'm from South Florida, however, I was one of the architects who originally worked with IT&T on this project back in the early 80s. And I followed this city for many, many years in Flagler County, and I'm very excited to work there now. Excited to bring some expertise there of my 40-some-odd years of designing projects like this, and hopefully we'll be showing you some more as time goes on. So let's start the project, the presentation here, and then Bill will just move forward. I think Bill did a wonderful job. I actually learned a lot about the processes with his explanations and the things that we had to meet and such, which was wonderful. We know the location of it. Next slide, Bill. It's a wonderful site. The views from the second and third floors of this project will be outstanding. Next slide. The shape of the site with the lakes that were previously dug, Bill, you're correct, it was a borrow pit, and they built these lakes. The areas they cleared there were actually the areas that would move trucks around and fill up the trucks and such. Next slide. So we needed to pay attention to the neighborhood because we do have a surrounding neighborhood. And that's part of why we land planted the way we did. Next slide. We are keeping the vegetation existing to remain around the project. Yes, there was a question about the south side of the project. John Horan and myself had the land mowed down prior to the neighborhood meeting. I went out there and photographed the site. I put up a 30-foot pole, and the trees are close to twice that height there. There's a berm there that's probably closer to 10 feet, and John walked out there with those neighbors, and that's why we didn't get any phone calls during the planning and zoning meeting, and noticed how tall that was. The second thing that I believe either IT&T did or whoever developed the single family to the south placed a staggered row of oak trees. So we do not want to touch these. As we move forward with the technical review, we'll get more data on the locations of these accurately and massage anything that we have to massage. Thank you. Next slide. Wetlands. As Bill mentioned, we're keeping all the wetlands. In my humble opinion, I'm dealing with wetlands down here in projects, and it's going to take me a year and a half to get through wetlands. There's no reason for us to do this if we can design a comprehensive plan that maintains these. We move projects forward quickly, we get people employed quicker, and obviously bring taxes to the city. Next slide. We maintain the lakes. We're going to clean up around the lake banks and leave them as they are. That small lake is gorgeous. It's almost got a little sandy beach on it as we went through the site. So we're very excited about how the first floor of the units review these lakes as well as the upper floors of the units and be enjoyed by the surrounding areas, neighborhood, as well as the new residents of this community. Next slide. We have site and building design goals. This is something I do when I start a project. I take a look at it and what we'd like to accomplish. Next slide. We need to respect the natural land environment. The neighborhoods, the wetlands, and the lakes, as you notice on our plan. Next. Design within those parameters. A lot of times things don't work, but if you give the right person the right amount of time, solutions can appear. Next slide. We want to create a vehicle roadway system to serve internal neighborhoods and clusters, not to interfere with existing neighborhoods. Yes, we spoke about coming in on the south side many times, but the best answer, and we do this a lot and a lot of plans we do, and have the emergency stabilized soil. So therefore, anybody has to get out of our community because US 1 is blocked, has a way to get out, and also emergency access. That's very important for, obviously, any type of an emergency on site. Next. Want to create usable open space and pedestrian pathways to enjoy that environment. It's very pretty out there. It's very natural, and that's what Northern Florida is all about. And that's, as you see, when we go through the slides here, you'll see how we created those spaces. Next. Designed within the architectural style that's the vernacular to the area. There's a lot of traditional architecture there. There's some contemporary. There's some very old architecture. I am aware of the ones I've done there. And I believe that, you know, as the more north you go, the traditional styles, those homes seem to work very well in that type of vernacular style. Next. Here's this nice Google view of the site. You can see the openness of the land that we paid attention to, and you clearly see the wetlands area delineated very well. It's a wonderful buffer from US 1. As US 1 grows in terms of traffic, the people living back in the center of the site are going to be very peaceful. Next. Here you see the boundary of the site. Next. The wetlands that we're, the buffer that we are maintaining. Next. And now you see how we just infilled into those areas. I must say, this might be my 40th site plan that I've done on this site. We really worked well with Brett and Jason from CPH, John with a lot of his comments. I want you to notice one thing on this site is that all the major parking and or parking lights are internal to the building. And that was one of the questions of the residences, which was wonderful. What you'll normally see at night is a simple residential building with the natural lights in the building itself. There will be no casting of floodlights or anything out towards neighbors, which they were concerned about. Next slide. Here's your color site plan that Bill demonstrated, something just very simple and graphic. Next slide. Future development. We left this site open to see what kind of support facility this community and the residents around this community may need. It could be a commercial and mixed use with residential. We don't know at this time, but we've left that open. Also, a church was interested in this site in the future, and maybe that's a possibility as we move forward. Next slide. Clubhouse and management office, over 8,400 square feet, 2,500 square feet of that facility is the leasing office. The remaining is the amenity areas. Amenities are very big with these types of communities. It's a lifestyle that we're bringing here. We're just not putting in an apartment or residence sticking in the middle of the woods there without something more for the residents to use. Next. We created neighborhoods within this site plan. There's 74 apartments in neighborhood, or 76 apartments in neighborhood one. Next. 56 and two. Next. And 124 in that neighborhood. Next slide, please. Next slide. These are the open spaces at the clubhouse and the little peninsula going into the lake. Also, you can demonstrate, next slide, the natural nature trail around the lake, as well as the community sidewalk. When we design multifamily, we have to design in accordance with the Fair Housing Act design guidelines. A person has to leave that furthest unit and get to a major intersection such as US 1. Hopefully one day there might be a bus stop there to assist in terms of transportation and such. Next slide. This is a type 2 building. These have garages. The purpose of the garages is that there's approximately 942 people per day or families moving into Florida. Flagler County sales of new homes have increased 42%. I think we're running out of single family homes at this moment there and can't keep up with the influx of people. So we believe that the market is going to demand something like a single family home. So we added garages to these units that are direct access to the units. Next slide. We also have front porches that we have on this community so that they relate to the street as a single family with a front porch would. Next slide. These are the groups of driveways with the tandem parking. So the person who would purchase a unit that has a garage attached already has their two parking spaces right there. Next slide. So these are the garages that would feed. The next slide, please. those units. That's the ground floor unit. You leave your garage and go right into your unit. Next slide. That garage will serve, next slide, the unit that sits above the garages. Next slide. The third garage will serve the unit, next slide, above that ground floor unit. The upper floor units will not have garages. However, we did add motorcycle garages and bike storage. You can see that on both ends of the building. There's also motorcycle parking on the site plan outside. Again, I understand the activities up there and the freeness that we have in those areas, so we want to pay attention to that as well. Next slide, please. As Bill mentioned, these are the elevations. You can see the rear elevation with the garage doors. There's also some cantilevers of the unit sitting over them, so some of the cars will be partially covered as well. We have a breezeway entryway. You see that there's two breezeways on the photograph there that feed the units internally. So it's an open air corridor, which is very nice today, we have, especially in Florida. You think that, you know, leaving the residence in a corridor that's not air conditioned, it's the same difference as you leave your front door to go to your car in your residence. Next slide. These are the front porches that will face the main drive coming in, as we're calling it, the parkway. Next slide. We have some metal roofettes. The main roofing is an architectural fiberglass shingle. However, we wanted to bring a little element into the buildings in terms of the entryway and some nice roofette elements on the side elevation to, again, create some nice animation in the building. Next. Here's a rendering that you would see this as you're driving down the parkway. We included parallel parking, so a visitor can park in front of your unit. It doesn't have to drive through a parking lot to try to find a parking space. Next. The amenities, the recreational center. As you look around it, on the right side of this building, you have a foyer that enters into the leasing office where the leasing and management of the company will be there. Management on site will be some type of 24/7 with security and such. The site is not gated. However, we will have, you know, security cameras and things in the recreational area and such like that so we can see what's going on. The main entrance of the building, you can notice that there's a grand room there with a lot of activities happening, a nice indoor-outdoor bar facing the lovely pool, a lanai area. On the far left side, you've got your fitness, multi-purpose rooms where they can do different activities. Outside, we have the cabana grill where there are restrooms with a pool, as well as some gas grills out there and some picnic tables. On the far right side, we have cabanas that will probably be like a fabric structure that you've seen in some nice hotels that will work very nicely, you know, for children and such like that. The pool's a good size, and then we're going to have ourselves a little dock going out to the water. Next slide. Here's a view of the recreational center. You can see a tot lot, a pickleball court, some activities like that, open area. Suitable parking. We do not need all that parking for the leasing office, but, you know, people are going to walk, bike, ride, and such. We'll also include some bike stands there for bicycles and such so people can walk, bike, ride, or if they have to take a vehicle, they obviously can pull into some parking. Next. This is the view looking east. You can see how it blends in there. You can see that the single family homes will be looking exactly what they'll be looking at today, a nicely buffered area and lakes and wetlands. Next slide. And this is the one that Bill showed you. And again, obviously when we pop our drawing into a Google map, all the angles are off and such. So it does look like sometimes buildings are on top of each other, but in reality are not. That closest point of that building to the south is way over 40, 50 feet, and it goes up to almost 100 and something feet at the other end. So it's a triangular piece. We also will add some landscaping along there as well, as you can see some new trees and such to help that situation. It's going to help both our project as well as the neighbors. Next slide. I want to thank everybody, but also introduce a couple of people who are very important in this. On the phone here, we have Meyer Hanna, who's the owner of Mag Real Estate and Development, Tom Harry, who's the director of the construction department for the company. Myself, and also we've worked with the civil engineers, and Mr. John Horan, which I have to apologize to because I added him to the slide, so somehow that didn't get there. Two other things I'd like to bring up. Bill mentioned about utility extension. This is something that, yes, we know we need to do and working towards that. However, paying for it all, we're hopeful that there is a some type of working mechanism that we can work with the existing people along US 1. We also heard that there's other lines being extended in that area. I know Brett and Jason may have more information on that. So I just want to clarify that we will work together to accomplish this project. Again, I want to thank the staff and everyone. I've enjoyed this tremendously. I am moving towards working more in the Northern Florida area for my firm here. South Florida is a tough place to do things, so I enjoy you all, and hopefully I can answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Council, any questions or comments at this time? Councilmember Ness.
These are rental units, I presume?
Yes, they are.
So the owner will maintain the property, long-term maintenance?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Does that conclude
the question?
Questions?
I didn't see any solar infrastructure or anything in the renderings, but I understand that probably something that may not may be excluded from the renderings. Are there plans to have any type of solar panels or energy efficient equipment on the roofs?
No, something like that. What we usually do is, you know, a lot of LED lightings, the lighting for the park lots, LEDs. As technology grows every day, things have been outdated tomorrow, and today there'll be something new. So as we move forward, there's some lighting systems today for like maybe the little walkway lines or stuff that aren't photometric. So we'll obviously take a look at all those. That would be much cheaper than running around electrical through the whole site. But in terms of any heavy energy type of solar use at this moment in time is not planned, but however, we do have open minds for that.
Understood. Thank you.
Council, any other questions or comments at this time?
Not at this time.
Okay. Open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 5, please do so at this time. Close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
I'll second the motion.
Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Klupas?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Nay.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Councilmember Nets?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1.
We'll now move to agenda item number 6, which is a resolution approving the final plat for Grand Landings Phase 4.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. And to present the final plat and answer questions is Bill Hoover.
Good morning again. This is phase 4 of Grand Landings. It's about 137 acres. And this portion of Grand Landings is located about midway between Belterre Boulevard on the west and Seminole Woods Boulevard on the east. The PUD was approved way back in Collier County in 2005. The preliminary plat was approved about the end of last year, and then construction commenced about the first of this year. If you remember, council members and mayor, last August, the City Council approved the expansion of Grand Landings to 775 acres, roughly, and added a little over 100 single-family homes to bring it to 890. This is the plat layout with the upper left-hand corner is where the north arrow is pointing. We have 186 single-family lots, and there's 21 common area tracts. A performance bond for the infrastructure in the amount of about $945,000 has been received and found acceptable. Staff's recommendation is that City Council adopt Resolution 2020 approving final plat for Grand Landings Phase 4 and authorizing the mayor to execute the plat and staff to issue a final plat development order for AR 4375. Thank you.
Thank you. Council, any questions at this time?
I just need to know the size of those units, please, out of the energy 90. Give me the breakdown, please. 1, 2, and 3 families, or 3 bedrooms, I mean.
I'm going to say the homes in here are going to be consistent. So everything's single-family detached. They're going to be consistent. If I remember the last time I was at Grand Landings, those homes are probably 1,600 to 3,000 square feet. 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, 2-car garages, at least 2 bathrooms.
Thank you.
Any other questions, council members? Not, I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 6, please do so at this time. Thank you. Take it back to this council. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
There's a second.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Aye.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Councilmember Netz?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Consent agenda items number 7, 8, 9, 10. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on any of those items, please call in at 386-223-1690. Thank you, Doug. We'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as read.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
Aye.
Councilmember Branquino?
Yes.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes.
Councilmember Netz?
Yes.
Mayor Holland?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Now move to public participation. It's the end portion of our agenda. Please call in at 386-223-1690. It's star mute. You'll be recognized after giving your name for the record. Thank you, Doug. We'll close public comment. Now move to discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Councilmember Netz?
Nothing.
Vice Mayor Clufus?
I have nothing for today. Thank you.
Councilmember Branquino?
Nothing today.
Councilmember Cuff?
Nothing for this meeting.
Nothing as well. Discussion by City Attorney matters and not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mayor.
Discussion by City Manager of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing this morning, thank you, Mayor.
All right.
Do you have do you have to report any emergency?
I did it again. Yes, I do. Okay. Thank you.
That's okay.
I do have something again. We have to rescind the all right, and I apologize. Please find attached in your packet a report for sole source and or emergency purchases for this period. Again, you will notice a few purchases related to the ongoing management of COVID-19. More importantly, these sole source emergency purchases were for, I'll read a few as an example, emergency installation of a new installation of traffic software. We had gearbox on a pump on ditch number 5, wetland monitoring, submersible pumps, and a belt replacement for the meter belt press at water plant 2. So mostly public works. Those are listed again in your packet for August 2020 emergency purchases with requisition numbers. It looks like 2165, 2227, 22236 listed. So thank you.
Thank you. That concludes your report?
Yes.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Moved we adjourn.